Discussion number 12599, Mrs. Clenaghan, Reel 1.
S-U-T-T-I-E,
Margaret.
Which is most peculiar.
It is.
It's Scottish, of course.
Right, so this is Mrs. Margaret Sutty Clenaghan, Reel 1. And if I could ask you then, Mrs. Clenaghan, first of all, you know, about your family, where you were born and brought
up,
and the sort of family lifestyle you had.
Yes, because it's fairly unusual. Do I start now? I was born in Gibraltar in 1907 because my father was of Sheerness Dockyard. He was a shipwright diver and he was sent to Gibraltar. In fact, he was sent to Gibraltar before he was married. He went back to Scotland, married my mother, took her out to Gibraltar, and there I was born, in Gibraltar. Now, I stayed in Gibraltar until I was 4 years old, so that would be 1911. And then my father, who had spent 7 years in Gibraltar as a Sheerness, attached to Sheerness Dockyard, but a shipwright diver, he came back after 7 years, so that would make it 1911 when I came back, because I was four. I went to Sheerness, stayed in Sheerness. We had a house in James Street, and I went to school in Sheerness. But a year later, my father, when he came back from Gibraltar, was put on the floating dock, which was moored off Sheerness Dockyard. He was still off Sheerness Dockyard, but he had a post as a shipwright diver on the floating dock. They decided, I think they must have had some idea, there must have been rumours of war, because for some reason the Sheerness Dockyard, or whoever was in charge, the Admiralty, I suppose, sent the floating dock round to Harwich. That was towed round to Harwich with my father on the dock. We all went by train and we joined him in Harwich. Now, this was quite important because my earliest memories of the war was because we were in lodgings in Harwich to start off with, until he bought a house in Dovercourt, which is attached to Harwich. My earliest memories of the war was the fact that we were in lodgings at a place between Harwich and Parkeston, that's quite well known, and there was rumours. I must have then been just seven. This must have been 1914. I only say that because we were in lodgings and it was before our house was bought. There was rumours that there was a German hiding in some ruins of an old brickworks that were opposite where we were lodging. And we children were terrified. It was like Napoleon was the booby man. This was our booby man. And, of course, we were also fascinated. And this disused brickfield had lots of tunnels leading up to the large chimney stacks. And we used to go down there timorously, sort of expecting to be pounced on by a German in a helmet with a spike on the top. So war must have been on then, or else I would not have had the memory of being so frightened of this German that was supposed to be hiding in the ruins of a brick field. Did you put it
on? Very interesting you talking about a floating dock, Mrs. Clinigan.
Yes.
What is a floating dock?
Floating dock anchors off Sheerness Dockyard. Now, this floating dock was a dock, and it could be submerged so that boats such as frigates, submarines, could be floated in to the submerged dock, put on blocks of wood, and then my father, as a diver, had to go down in his diving suit with his heavy lead boots on and the helmet, and he went underwater to make sure that the boats, which were usually frigates, small boats and submarines, that they were on the blocks, because if they weren't on the blocks, when the dock was brought up by some mechanism, they would break their back. So his job was quite important. Then the dock would be brought up by machinery, and then they'd set to work and repair whatever was in the floating dock. So it was like the dock in the dockyard, but this one, the boats were floated in and it was submerged and then brought up. Can you stop it?
Thank you very much. That's a very full description and a very interesting one. Yeah. Presumably, your father, you know, this would have been, am I right in thinking, the early days of diving?
Yes, because he wore the helmet, the heavy suit and the leaden boots.
Must have been a dangerous job then.
It was a dangerous job because there happened to be two went down, and I know at one time I had the sort of feeling that my mother was very worried about something, because there was almost an accident where their air pipes had got mixed, but as it happened they managed to get them up without any bother. But my mother, I had a feeling, would have liked my father to have not been a diver, to have given it up because of the almost having had an accident.
Thank you. In age 7, would you not, at the beginning of the war?
Yes, 1914. I was born in 1907, so I was 14. In 1914, I was 7. And I was 7 about the time that war was started, because my birthday's in September. So I was just 7.
Well, were you conscious, you know, that a war had started?
No. As I say, the first memory I had was of the German hiding in the ruins. And we knew that it was a war then, but we weren't really conscious of it. We were too young. And but later on, of course, it slowly dawned on me that what was happening. This is...
Yes. Mm. Yes, what are your memories of the war?
Yes, well,
you know, in Harwich, can you remember any sort of significant...
Well, the first things I remember was that after we had bought a house, my father had bought a house in Dovercourt, we used to go down to the quay at Harwich, where the troop ships came in from Felixstowe to Harwich, and from Harwich the troops went off to Flanders, and the boats used to go backwards and forwards. Sometimes they were empty, but they went back at regular intervals, and on a few occasions we went on the boats and went to Felixstowe and back just for fun. It was a bit of excitement because the boats were empty. But other times they came in and discharged this crowd of khaki-clad figures. But still we didn't have a feeling of war. It was fun to go backwards and forwards when the boats were empty, as we did sometimes.
Many defences in the area. Did they put up sort of defence measures?
I do mention later on about the searchlights and the guns.
Well, I leave you to say it in your own way,
yes.
Shall I?
But I was going to go on from there to say when it did occur to me that there was a war on and that it was a frightening thing happening.
Yes, when did that occur?
Well, because of these soldiers, they came off the troop ships. Then my mother, everybody had to give up a room of their house. I don't know about everybody, but I know in my case, my mother had to clear her front room, as they called it in those days, and even take up the carpet, and it was just bare boards. And 8 soldiers per night slept in there, not every night, but because I don't remember this very distinctly. All I know is that the room was stripped, the front room was stripped, carpet and all, and soldiers lay on the boards. And we didn't have to have anything to do with them. My mother didn't have to look after them or anything, but she always made them heaps of scones. And then I, as a child, wanted to know what happened to them, because they just boy. Well, I mean, they were young men to me, of course. But is this being recorded? Well, it better wipe that up. Oh, I see. I inquired, or I was very curious as to know what happened to these. They came in one day and they were gone the next. We were supposed to have had nothing to do with them. They didn't come into our quarters, our part of the house at all. But I did know that my mother was very anxious about them and made heaps of scones and took scones and cakes into them. And I heard them sort of saying thank you and that sort of thing. But I asked about what happened to them, where did they go? And it was then that I realised something terrible was happening, and that because my mother would be upset and she'd say they are going to war and they most likely will never come back. And then I realised that these nice-looking young fellows were maybe going to die. And I think from then on I did realise that there was a war. There was not, I don't remember there being a lot of guns, but there must have been gun emplacements. I try to remember, I know there were huts that soldiers, on meadows that soldiers were in, because we were not supposed to go there. I suppose it was out of bounds, but that must have been where the guns were. But I do remember hearing the guns, because one night of them, there were guns and searchlights, and I remember I must have been about 8 then, or maybe 9, but it was between 8 and 9, and the guns were going. And the searchlights were, the sky was full of light with the searchlights interweaving. And suddenly, in the my mother and I were very foolhardy. We always went out to see what was happening. My father always took my brother and sat under the stairs and was very concerned and didn't want my mother to go out, and certainly didn't want me to go out, but we didn't seem to bother. We went out anyhow, and the guns were firing and the searchlights were weaving in and out in the sky. And suddenly in the light of the searchlights was a zeppelin, a large zeppelin, sort of a huge sort of sausage shape, which was brilliantly lit up in the searchlights. They crisscrossed it. The guns were firing, the searchlights were on it, and suddenly it exploded. It just broke in 2 halves, and from it came falling things, which I suppose was structure. As a child, reading things like Barry and that sort of thing, J. and Barry, and having an imaginative mind, I imagined it was the men falling out of it, but now I think back it must have just been the struts falling down. And all doors in the street opened, and out poured the people in pyjamas and night clothes and some dressing gowns, because everybody thought that it had fallen in a meadow called Crocus Meadow, which was just behind the houses opposite us. And we all rushed to this place. Of course, it wasn't there at all. It had fallen down at Romford, which was about 20 miles away. And that was a Zeppelin. Now, I don't really remember planes very much, except that towards the end of the war, the searchlights were still in the sky. I was older then, and I do remember a plane being caught in the light, but I don't remember it falling or anything like that. But they did have planes towards the end, because this plane had dropped a bomb which fell near Harwich Church. Later on, I went and saw it being dug up, and they were very casual about the digging up, because I can remember being very close to the hole they were digging where the bomb had fallen. Nowadays, of course, you'd have crowds of police keeping us back. Anyhow, they retrieved it and no damage was done. But the experience of seeing the Zeppelin falling in two halves from the sky is very, very vivid. But so there were guns and there were searchlights, but that's all I remember about the defences.
To have seen a Zeppelin, you know, were there that many about?
No, I don't remember seeing a Zeppelin apart from the one that was in the caught in the searchlights and brought down by the guns that were firing. No, I don't remember seeing one any other time.
I suppose really Harwich would have been a very vulnerable place in the war.
I think so. Because they had, I mean, even today there's continental travel, isn't there, from Harwich. Harwich is a port. Parkston, I think, is the port proper. But Harwich Quay also they go from different parts of the continent. It was much used, I'm sure, in those days, from Harwich to the continent, taking the soldiers.
Yes, and you've described so well, you know, these boats sort of with their...
Yes, going backwards and forwards, bringing them from the north of England by train to Felixstowe, and then from Felixstowe on the troop ships to Harwich, and from Harwich to the continent. And so they must have come from all over the country to Harwich. They'd also go to Dover and places like that. I didn't have any experience of that, just of Harwich or mustn't. I went to a school that was between Harwich and Dovercourt. We lived in Dovercourt, but the school was on the main road to Harwich and very near Harwich. Opposite to the school was a fort, a hill with a fort on the top. One day I was in the playground. I must have been about 10 by this time, and there was a noise of singing, and we all rushed to the railings and watched to see what it was, thinking it was a sort of almost a carnival atmosphere. There were crowds of people about, and then suddenly they came up the high street opposite the school, German prisoners of war. And in the front, there was one who was tall, blonde German who was singing. The prisoners were singing, and they were led by this German, and they were singing. And somebody must have picked up a stone and thrown it at him, because though he was still singing, he had blood sort of coming down from his forehead. And the feeling I got was a feeling of almost admiration for him, that there he was, taking no notice of the fact that there was blood coming down from his forehead, and he was still singing the German national anthem. I suppose that's what it was. I don't remember what it was, but I was sort of very impressed. I knew they were hateful people, or they were considered hateful people, but I know I had a kind of feeling of how brave he was to be singing. And then, of course, they were opposite the school, and they would turn left and marched up and in the fort. Now, the next thing I wanted to say was this fort. As it was in the last war, places were dug up and made into allotments. Even Hyde Park was used, wasn't it, for food in the last war. Well, in the First World War, the same things happened. Now, we had a large garden in the house in Dovercourt, and my father was of farming stock. He'd been a farmer's boy before he went into the dockyard, and so he was a gardener of quite considerable skill. So when it comes to the food question during the war, I find it difficult to paint a proper picture, because my father was such an excellent gardener that we did not suffer, not to the extent that other people must have suffered, because since then, of course, I have read books and I know that there was great scarcity, but I wasn't conscious of the scarcity, because my father grew vegetables and potatoes and in great quantities. So I didn't feel that we were particularly deprived. Also, my mother kept chickens, so that we had many eggs, and even when it came to, say, Christmas or some celebration, there was always a chicken to be eaten. Unfortunately, my mother became very attached to these chickens, and when it came to the point of eating one, she would not, she cooked it, but she would not eat it, because it was to her a pet, and she had names for each of these chickens. And I remember one cockerel that was very ferocious and was used as a kind of watchdog. When we went down the garden and out of the back gate, we always had to take a broom with us if he was on the loose, and then throw the broom back after we got outside the door. And I remember that. That was part of the war effort, that we kept chickens. And the other thing about food was sugar. Now, my father was on this floating dock that I mentioned before, and next to my father's dock was a large training ship called the Ganges. Now, this was a beautiful ship, large, like a liner. It's no longer there, but it was anchored off Shotley. Now, Shotley, I think, still has a training centre, but it used to be, of course, a very big training centre for young boys who were, or young men who were going into the Navy. I think it still is used, but not to the extent it was used during the war or before the war. And this Ganges ship had food on board for the sailors, of course, but at times, quarterly, the quartermaster, I should imagine that's what he was called, would throw stuff overboard, or have stuff thrown overboard, because when they, because when it was time to order the next quarter victuals, I suppose they call it, the food for the sailors, if he had more on board, he wouldn't get as much. It would be taken off his next quarter. Now, I know this because one of the quartermasters, or one of the ones in charge, was a friend of my father's, and I think I can seem to remember hearing them talking about it and laughing about it, really. But the point was that the food that was thrown overboard very often got washed up onto the floating dock, which was very, very near, so near that you could sort of talk to the sailors over the water, as I did when I went to visit my father on the dock. And so that means that I remember that we had sugar. Now, I remember this because I had a sweet tooth, and if we hadn't had sugar, I know I would have suffered. And I do remember that my brother was born in 1917, and I was punished because I stole sugar. I had taken a spoonful of sugar, so we must have had sugar. And the only way, I had an aunt was staying with us while my brother was born, and I had taken this sugar, and she said that would I go without sugar for a week, or should she tell my mother that I had stolen some sugar? And I said I'd rather go without the sugar. Years afterwards, I found that she had told my mother because she thought it was rather remarkable that I should choose to go without the sugar. But the point is that we must have had sugar. And the only way I can remember us getting sugar was that the sugar was thrown off the Ganges and floated up on the dock, because I remember my mother drying out the sugar and that it tasted slightly, sometimes salty.
Lucky that most... That's
right.
Am I right in thinking other people didn't have sugar?
No. Mm. And they have never had sugar since, because many of my contemporaries won't have sugar. They can't bear, even if I put... You haven't got this on, have you? Oh.
What you're saying is that
yes.
It's affected their
yes,
taste.
That's right.
Yes. Were there, did you find, for instance, that with shortages that you had sort of queues, as one sees in countries?
Yeah, no, you see, if I was being, I could say yes, but I can't remember. I was never in a queue. And that's why I emphasise the fact that I think we were fortunate, because I'm quite sure that other people didn't have the same advantages that we had, because my father, being a farming stock, would make it easier for us because he found it, he enjoyed his gardening.
Yes, it's interesting you saying about your allotment, you know,
yes,
the difference that made
yes.
to your
yes.
lives. Yes.
But on the other hand, I wonder how he managed to work so hard, a large garden, a large allotment. All I remember was going and when he dug up the potatoes, I put them in the basket. I don't remember weeding or doing anything to help him with the garden.
Did the war make your father's diving job any more difficult or more
intensive? It made it dangerous at times. My mother was a completely Scottish, I think that's what she would say, Scottish, or was it Scotch? Scottish. And she was very tough, very strong, and yet at times I felt her fear. And it was because my father had to go into the submarines. There was a boom across from Felixstowe to Harwich. Well, this boom... somehow, and German submarines were sometimes caught in the boom, and they would have to be docked. How they got them from the boom, I don't know. But I do know that my father had German submarines, and they were on the dock, and that he had to go down, and he had to investigate, as a diver, whether they had bombs on board. It seems peculiar, but there you were. My mother was frightened. The only time I've ever seen my mother cry was when my father had to go back. He was called out to go and investigate in a submarine whether there was any bombs aboard. So I knew that she was frightened. And as I say, it's the only time I've seen you. What had made my mother so upset, and as I say, it's the only time I'd ever seen my mother with tears, or my mother in tears, and I knew that that was so horrible and frightful, because I overheard a part of the conversation. I must have overheard it, because they wouldn't tell me. And my father had said that he was very upset because he'd gone inside a submarine, and he'd gone to grasp the hand of a corpse, a German, a dead German inside the submarine. And the hand, the skin of the hand came off. And just as though it was a glove.